Well, Hogan, it has been less than a week. We now know the results of what happened in Iowa. Were you at all surprised?
No, I was kind of surprised by the differential between Donald Trump's eventual landing spot there at over 50% versus everyone else. But they, you know, they ran the race like you're supposed to run a race. And Huckabee always used to tell me you run a campaign one of two ways, either unopposed or scared. And look, Donald Trump isn't scared of anything, but I think their team said, let's pretend like we're 20 points down and really get out the vote, really build an apparatus. And they've done that in every state. And you're seeing the fruits of that labor. I mean, he had the message. He's the better candidate. People love and respect what he did as president. And I just don't think the lane was there for anybody else. I mean, he doubled his vote totals amongst women from the last time, from 24 to 48%. That's huge. He won every county but one, and the only county he lost was by one vote, and that's where all the Democrats crossed over to vote for Nikki. 43% of her supporters say if it were down to Trump and Biden, they'd vote for Biden? My gosh. What a big win for
him. Those numbers are stark. And hey, so now we move on to...
The biggest political comeback in American history. He was written off by virtually everybody, and Donald Trump flexed some muscle and shows how powerful he is in GOP politics.
Donald Trump as the underdog. You don't hear that too much. True. So now we're on to New Hampshire, the first in the nation primary, since Iowa was a caucus. And we have an excellent guest to preview that for us and tell us what the lay of the land is, a guy that you and I both know and a friend and a good guy in the media. So let's get to it, because this is the Line Drive podcast. And we are joined now by the great Paul Steinhauser of Fox News and a national political reporter. And you have been around the block, Paul. Thanks very much for joining us. And that's a kind way of saying you're just as old as I am, practically.
I've been covering this guy. I remember the 2004 cycle. So I've been around a while. Okay, guys. But let me pick up on Hogan and what you were saying, because I've been spending a lot of time in Iowa over the last year and a half, about 11 trips, and I was just out there for a week and a half. It was an overwhelming victory, right? Considering where Donald Trump was a year ago, it is an incredible comeback. And give kudos to his campaign, guys like Chris LaSavita, Susie Wiles, people who stayed very disciplined, people who put together a really powerful machine, very different than what Donald Trump had in 2016 when he narrowly lost to Ted Cruz. Night and day.
I've known, actually, Chris LaSavita hired me for my first ever political job back in 1999. He made me the communications director.
1784.
Come on.
Me too.
I'll tell you one day if we have some time, I'll tell you some stories about President Jefferson. He was
something else.
What a guy.
What's interesting?
Go ahead.
You thought Iowa was cold. Right. This is why when being from South Carolina, I was always love how we'd go through Iowa, the tundra, New Hampshire, the frozen forest, and then everybody lands in Charleston. It's like 75 degrees. We're like, why haven't we been here the whole time? Exactly. It's so cold in New Hampshire. Paul Steinhauser still has his Christmas garland up on his mantle behind him. That's how cold it is.
You know, it's a good look.
It is. It's great. Yeah.
It's not still December up there. So, Paul. you are New Hampshire based and cover national politics from that perch. But every 4 years, New Hampshire becomes the center of attention. And that's where we are right now. Iowa is behind us. As Hogan said, it was a resounding victory. You noted that as well. Now on to New Hampshire, where it's definitely a different landscape. Nikki Haley has probably some more strength in New Hampshire than she had in Iowa. I think Ron DeSantis, by all accounts, is weaker, much weaker in New Hampshire than he was in Iowa. Tell us from your seat, what's the lay of the land? What's happening today in New Hampshire?
Well, you got it. Let's start with the weather, because you mentioned that, Hogan and Tim. It was crazy. Listen, I like the winter. I live up here, but it was crazy. Sub-zero temperatures for five or six straight days in Iowa. Here, a little more tropical, I guess you could say. We're in the 20s right now. Was in the teens last night. So it's cold here. We got snow on the ground. No doubt about it. Winter is here, but it's not like what we saw when that blizzard slammed through Iowa. The lay of the land, Tim, this is a very different state, obviously, than Iowa. We're still a purple state. Iowa used to be one. Not anymore. We are very much a purple state here. Remember, our independent voters, they make up 40% of the electorate here in New Hampshire. They've long played a crucial role in the presidential primaries. I'm one of them, right? I can go in on next Tuesday, pick up a ballot, either Democrat or Republican. And that's what independents, they have the choice to do that. And then when, after they cast their ballot, they go back to declaring themselves an undeclared voter or an independent. So it's a very different electorate here, much more hospitable to Nikki Haley, makes it a little bit tougher for Donald Trump. If you believe the latest tracking polls out here, Trump is right around 50%. Haley's about 14 points behind her. DeSantis in the single digits in all the polls. Really not a factor here. I interviewed Haley this week after here in New Hampshire at an event in Rochester. She told me that Ron DeSantis, quote unquote, is invisible in New Hampshire and in South Carolina. And that's where, of course, this race is going to go next after next Tuesday.
Yeah. You know, Paul, so much talk of the evangelical voter in Iowa because they do make up, you know, a large portion of the electorate there. I will say New Hampshire statistically is the least churched state in the country. Now, that doesn't mean there's a bunch of godless heathens running around. I'm just trying to point out the facts here. So it is a different electorate. No Republican in history in a primary has ever won Iowa and New Hampshire. So the question is, if Trump did something historic in Iowa, winning there by such a large margin, then comes to New Hampshire. If he wins in New Hampshire, you've been doing politics for a long time. I've still got you in my phone as a CNN person. That tells you how long I've had you in my contacts. And that was years ago. Where's the pathway for anybody else? If and these are all ifs, I get it, but he pulls off Iowa, he'll win Nevada after win New Hampshire, then he's 3-0 and the field is 0-3. Where do they begin to pick up any momentum at all?
It's a great question. And Hogan, you and I do go back, I think, to the 2012 Santorum campaign. That's the first time I got to work with you. Listen, I think it really depends on the margins here in New Hampshire. If Donald Trump is over 50% and is beating Nikki Haley when we see the results on Tuesday night by double digits, I mean, will she go on to her home state? Yeah, probably. Will DeSantis march on? Yeah, because it's pretty, you know, he's downplaying New Hampshire. And we can get into that and why he's not really campaigning here full time. But they'll live to fight another day. But, you know, it's just a matter of
when. You can't lose your home state. Nikki was my governor. I'm from South Carolina. I just don't see how she goes, all right, I'm down. Because at her speech in Iowa, and I would argue she should have just gone straight to New Hampshire and been like, hey, I barely even played in Iowa and almost beat DeSantis. He spent $150 million. That's how hot we are right now. We're going to win New Hampshire. We'll go to South. But she said, just look at New Hampshire. Look at South Carolina. I'm like, well, you're down 10 in one of those states at least. You're down 25, 30 in your home state. Mm-hmm. So there's no way, I don't see a world in which Nikki says, all right, I'm going to keep going and I'm going to lose my home state by 30 points. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong.
You're talking to the campaigns more than I am. So you tell me.
No, you're not wrong at all. But what they're hoping and aiming for is if it isn't a victory here in New Hampshire, it's going to be something extremely close where she keeps Trump under 50 and she's maybe just a few points behind. A lot of the top strategists in this state that I talk to, you know, they say that's not even enough. She needs to win New Hampshire. And to do that, she's going to have to turn up the volume a little bit more against Donald Trump, which she has started to do. And she's just got to be aggressive in doing that retail campaigning between now and primary day with the help of Governor Sununu, who's probably the most energetic politician you will find in this country, who is with her. But you know, they've got a significant gap to close, and that's not going to be easy. I know New Hampshire voters are known as traditionally late deciders, right? You always hear that, and it is true. But if you look at these polls that are out in the last day or two, the vast majority of voters here are saying, well, I've already made up my mind. And so it's going to be tough to change that needle.
Yeah. And you mentioned Governor Sununu. I want to touch on that for a second, because having been in a lot of campaigns and been the spokesman for a lot of campaigns, including being comms director of President Trump's reelection campaign in 2020, you know, I watch the language that campaigns use. And when Nikki Haley, I mean, this one was smacked you in the face. It was so obvious. When she finished third in Iowa, she claimed that it was now a two-person race, having finished third, which is, you know, claiming that she was one of the two, despite the fact that she didn't finish in the top two, which was strange. Now she moves on to New Hampshire. And you mentioned Governor Sununu. These are quotes from Governor Sununu. In December of last year, he said, in December of last year, of 2023, yes. So just a few weeks ago, he said, Nikki Haley can give Trump that defeat that no one thought was possible in the next few weeks. And I think that's very likely to happen. Earlier, 2 weeks earlier than that, again, in just this past December, he said about New Hampshire for Nikki Haley, oh, it's an absolute win. If everyone that could vote in the primary comes out and votes, she's going to win in a landslide. And that's not an exaggeration. In January, this month, he said, I think she wins here in New Hampshire. However, yesterday, he said, we always wanted to have a strong second. That's the only expectation we ever laid out there. So here you go. I mean, that is just naked bar lowering. That is so obviously lowering the bar. What do you make of that? You read anything into that?
Yeah, because that comment was to me. He also was at CBS. With a CBS interview as well. This was, as we sit down and record this interview on a Thursday morning, the night before Wednesday night, I was in Rochester, New Hampshire for the Haley rally. And of course, Sununu was there. He spoke to a couple reporters, including me. I did a quick one-on-one for Fox News. And again, I asked him, just like what you mentioned, I said, hey, let's go back a few weeks in December. You had those comments. And he said he still thinks she can win here, but he went on to say, we've already exceeded expectations in terms of a one-on-one race. And then he goes, a strong second is going to be great. So yeah, is he lowering the bar? Is he shifting the goalposts, whatever you want to say? Yeah, of course he is.
So
yeah, I mean, that's the standard practice for campaigns. Sure. They look at the thing on the ground and they don't want to overpromise. But when you've already spent weeks and months saying that New Hampshire is where you're going to break through, then I think the bar lowering becomes pretty obvious.
Speaking of lowering the bar, Paul, you just said that Sununu is the most energetic politician. You know, you can drive across the whole state in like 2 hours. So like, you don't have a lot of energy to go that far. Like go to Iowa and drive 5.5 hours across the state into a, come on.
But you dump it on my state though, Hogan. Okay.
Yeah, no, I love it. All it's right. One of the most beautiful states I've ever been in. I was up there for Santorum, obviously in 12, went around with one of the political experts there and it was beautiful. I just couldn't believe it. In fact, when I was flying into it, I was like, did they have a fire? Cause I was looking down and all the trees were like brown. And then I realized, oh, they actually have a fall here that's pretty, and the leaves were just outstanding. But you also said
it's amazing when the seasons change, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. It's in the South, it just turns cold or it's just hot. There's no like slow glide into fall and winter. You also said something like you used a phrase like turn up the volume. So earlier. So speaking of turning up the volume, there's a politician that you and I, all three of us, know fairly well, who is very good with the media and very good around microphones. So Chris Christie, who got out of the race there in New Hampshire, I'm not entirely sure his little hot mic moment wasn't on purpose because, I mean, he knows his way around a microphone, as I said, speaking of volume. But the conventional wisdom was, well, look, he's the Never Trumper. Nikki's trying to coalesce the Never Trump folks. So all of her votes are going to go to all of Christie's votes are going to go to Nikki. And I tweeted at the time, I'm not so sure because of that hot mic moment, I would imagine Christie kind of summarized or encapsulated the thought process of his supporters, which is Nikki's going to get her clock cleaned. DeSantis isn't ready for this. Neither is Nikki. So that anger and that vitriol, people who don't work in politics, that lingers on a supporter of a certain candidate for a while. So I'm not convinced that all of his supporters go, Nikki's now the one. I think a lot of them go, wait a minute. I don't like her because I liked Christie. Christie doesn't like her. I stand with him. And I just don't think I'm going to vote. Like, to heck with it. Trump's way ahead. So I'm not going to get involved. Is that what you're seeing? Is that the sense you get from a New Hampshire voter? Or are they like, no, we want to be involved regardless and we'll pick a new horse?
They want to be involved, but you're right. There are some, and I think the majority of the Christie supporters, and he was polling around, I don't know, 10-11% when he dropped out, which in a close race could be, enough to shift it one way or the other. Yeah. I think a majority of his voters will go for Nikki Haley. They're not enthused about her. They may hold their nose, but they'll still cast that ballot. But some, you're right, some will either not vote or remember, a lot of these supporters are independents. And they may, some of them may decide to, there's another contest up here. Remember, we have a New Hampshire Democratic primary. It's unsanctioned, but we have Dean Phillips and Marianne Williamson on, you know, running around campaigning here. Dean Phillips, as we speak right now, is with Andrew Yang today in New Hampshire. Remember, a name from the past.
Wow.
So there may be some that actually go to the Democratic side and either vote against or write in Joe Biden's name. So that's a possibility as well. But yeah, overall, I think Haley benefits from Christie getting out, but it was crystal clear, you know, she's not getting any endorsement from him. He made that very clear, not only in the hot mic moment, but then in his speech a few minutes later when he criticized her a couple of times. So that is not happening one bit.
Yeah. Let me ask you a mechanical question about that. Christie dropped out right before Iowa, and then Ramaswamy dropped out the night of the caucuses, so earlier this week, Monday night. Do they still appear on the ballot, or do they have the technology there? Are they still going to be on the ballot?
Still going to be on the ballot. Their name is still on the ballot because they filed, and they dropped out after the filing period ended. So yes.
So they still, even though they have announced that they're not part of the election anymore, and they've withdrawn from the race, the two of them, Christie and Ramaswamy, people can still vote for them. Now, in the case of Ramaswamy, I think it's pretty obvious that almost all his support goes to Trump. But as you guys are just been discussing where Christie's support would go, people can still vote for Christie and Ramaswamy. Does that factor in?
I believe that's the case. And I need to right now after this conversation double check with the Secretary of State's office, but I believe their names stay on the ballot. Is it a factor? They may get a few votes, and if it's razor thin up here, I guess it could make a difference, but those votes are probably going to be pretty negligible because remember, nobody's early voting up here, right? No early votes up here. It all has to happen next Tuesday.
Same day.
Right. You could do same day registration, but it's same day voting. So it's not like anybody's already cast a ballot and then their candidate drops off the ballot.
It's almost quaint to think about people actually voting on election day. You know what, in Iowa, NBC had some polling and others had some polling that showed that Republican caucus goers there were concerned primarily about two things: one, illegal immigration, and two, the economy. Now it's much more moderate electorate in New Hampshire. What do you hear? What are people concerned about? What's driving them to the polls, and what is motivating them to pick the candidate that they pick?
Yeah, we are a more moderate state, but border security is an issue that resonates up here. Remember, we're a border state, not with Mexico, but with Canada. And the candidates have been addressing that. Also, the opioid crisis, which has been hitting this state hard for years, has basically, been tied now to border security. The border security issue. So yeah, big issue. The economy, of course, as always, a huge issue up here, just like it is in any other state. Overseas involvement, national security, also a big issue. We got a lot of veterans here. We're one of the states, we're a small state, but when it comes to the percentage of veterans we have, it's pretty high. So maybe, overseas issues and conflicts resonate a little bit more here than they did in Iowa.
Okay. So this is something I think our listeners would actually enjoy. And I may be wrong here. The first votes are cast where in New Hampshire, and why is it so kind of cool? Tim mentioned the word quaint, and I was like, talk about quaint. This is such a cool tradition. Talk a little bit about the little town, the little place where they vote first.
Yeah, it's called Dixville Notch. It's up in the northern part of the state, the sparsely populated, very mountain area, a lot of big mountains up there. Very cold. I think it's cold here right now. It's really cold up there. Tiny town. They do it at midnight. So the clock strikes midnight on Tuesday, early Tuesday, that's when the votes come in. And it's a big tradition. There'll be plenty of media up there. Not a lot of people up there that go to the one location. So it's going to be, you're not getting hundreds of votes. You're getting votes in the teens. But Dixville Notch, it's a tradition that's been going on for well before even the three of us were around, and we're not youngsters. So,
yeah, I would love to be in the room. That's one of the things that I have not done that I would love to. I mean, I've been to New Hampshire during a presidential year. But
couldn't we do
to
that?
Be in the room at Dixville Notch would be awesome.
Why don't we just go there and do the podcast from there, Tim?
We could, but would it be the next Tuesday night?
Sure.
Yeah.
Can you guys stay next Monday night? Monday night. Can you stay
Monday
up
night?
Monday night, midnight. That's right.
Not easy to stay. I don't know. Can you stay up that late? I don't know if I can.
Hogan. No, Hogan's the one that gets out of bed at like 3 a.m. to go to the gym every day.
Yeah. But I go to bed way early.
Yeah, you do. We don't, we can't, we, a lot of times, yeah, we sometimes, we used to tape this podcast at 9 p.m. on a weeknight, Paul. And yeah. Hogan requested that we stop doing that because it was far too late.
No.
So we talked about Sununu a little bit, and back in Iowa, DeSantis had the support of the governor there, Kim Reynolds. He also had the support of Bob Vanderplatz, who's a big evangelical conservative leader in the state. And so the endorsements, you know, just the name endorsing another, endorsing a candidate, I don't know what that sways really, but it was the network and the grassroots operations that are actually of value to a candidate. Now, Sununu is backing Nikki Haley in New Hampshire. What does that bring? I mean, Sununu is obviously one of the extremely popular governors in the country of either party. Very, always very popular. His numbers are very high. His endorsement, does it help? And if so, how?
Like yeah,
in a tangible way.
It helps because it wasn't a one-day endorsement. This has been going, you know, he's been with her every time she's in New Hampshire. He's with her. He's brought her top advisor here. He's her top surrogate. He's been on all the national shows, but he's also been on local media nonstop. He's the one that's really been helping the campaign decide where she goes on a daily basis. As we speak right now, I think in about an hour, they're going to be at Roby's General Store in Hooksett, New Hampshire, which is a must stop if you're running for the White House. So he's been mapping out a lot of this stuff. So he brings a lot of that. Yes, he's very well known in this state and well liked. Maybe not so much among the far right, right? You know, actually got a lot of enemies on the far right here in this state. He's more of a moderate Republican, conservative, yes, but a little not as far to the right. But remember, those voters anyway were never going to vote for Nikki Haley. I think his cachet really, when it comes to that, is more with moderate Republicans and independents again, who play such a huge role in our storied primary here in this state.
So Sununu, obviously a big name in the state, helping Nikki Haley. We talked about the fallout or boost Nikki could get from a Chris Christie getting out, but no endorsement. On the other side, you have Vivek Ramaswamy, who got out and immediately endorsed Donald Trump and said, hey, I'm going to go around with you in New Hampshire, which he is now doing. He had a smaller percentage of the vote, obviously, in polling in New Hampshire. But, you know, I'm of the mind, as Tim said, endorsements typically don't matter all that much. The apparatus does, sure. It's a one-day story at best. But a lot of these governors are getting involved. That does make a little bit of a difference, I think. But is there an impact? Because if Trump is kind of on that margin of winning by, you know, getting to 50, that percentage Vivek had matters quite a bit. Do you see the Vivek voter going, all right, Vivek's out. I'm listening to him. He's all in on Trump. They're talking about truth. You know, they're talking about bucking the system. The motto of your state, of course, famously is live free or die. They take it very seriously up there. I can attest to that. Do they take a look at Vivek going with Trump and say, all right, I see Sununu with Nikki. He's a little too squishy or he's moderate or whatever. We like him, but Vivek captured something in our spirit. And now that he's with Trump, we're going to kind of, you know, vote with our legs and move over to Donald Trump's side of the aisle and say, now I'm going to cast a vote for Trump, or does that matter at all?
No, it does. And let's be honest, Vivek's supporters in this state and probably nationally were always in the MAGA camp, most of them. He did bring in some new voters for sure, because he was very young and vibrant on the campaign trail. But a lot of them, the vast majority of his supporters, were MAGA voters, and they were always going to head back to Donald Trump eventually. You would go to a lot of Vivek events here in New Hampshire and in Iowa over the last, well, he jumped in last February, and you would talk to a lot of these people, and a lot of them said, hey, I love Vivek. I love what he says, but I'm probably going to stick with Donald Trump. So they were always there, and now they're back in the fold with the former president. You look at some of Vivek's top people in this state, Fred Doucette, who was really one of the masterminds of Vivek's campaign here in this state. He was a co-chair for Trump's campaign in the state in 2016 and 2020. So a lot of them came from Trump world, and now they're probably back in Trump world. And I will say, go back to Iowa, you know, the endorsement from Reynolds and her being on the trail nonstop with DeSantis and the support and the network of Vanderplatz probably helped DeSantis get to that second place. If it wasn't for that, he may have finished third. And if he had done that, he wouldn't even be in the race anymore, would he?
No. Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if he would or not. Is there the possibility that he could still finish fourth in New Hampshire, even though Christie has said that he's out, if Christie's name does appear on the ballot?
Probably not. And DeSantis would like to finish in double digits here. That may be a stretch, but no, you know, he'll be in third regardless.
So moving beyond New Hampshire, I mean, we obviously don't know what's about to happen when voting commences, but let's say for the sake of argument that Trump does win and he wins by about two touchdowns in, you know, football terms or so. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a two possession game or more. As Trump takes New Hampshire. Moving on, it's about a month until South Carolina, which is we've talked about this in other episodes of the show. That's a really long time, and you know it takes money to keep a campaign going for an entire month. And you know, does DeSantis have that much in the tank? I don't know. Nikki Haley probably, you would assume, makes it to Election Day in her home state. But is there a path forward? Is there a path through? Because in Nevada, which comes next, Trump, I saw a poll that had Trump at 75%.
Yep.
And then pretty soon he's 4-0 after you get past Nevada. Big Tuesday or Super Tuesday is coming. Big Tuesday. Super Tuesday is coming.
Colossal.
It is a colossal Tuesday. Super Tuesday is coming. And it just, if you're not named Trump, is there any chance? Do you see a lane? Do you see a path to be able to get out there? You know, where is the next state that someone other than Trump can possibly win?
Yeah, it's an extremely narrow path, extremely, if it even exists at all. You mentioned Nevada. You know, Haley's not even in the caucus. So she's in the primary 2 days later where there are no delegates at stake. So I guess it doesn't hurt her. Nevada's nothing against Nevada, but it's like those results are going to be almost inconsequential, right? Trump is going to still be the massive front runner. And yeah, he'll win the caucus hands down over DeSantis. But I guess this is all going to come down to South Carolina. And what happens in New Hampshire will dictate how much strength Haley has going into her home state. We know DeSantis is going to come out of here with a horrible showing, but he's already pretty much telegraphed that he doesn't care about New Hampshire, that it's going to, and he is coming back up here. Listen, he's back home, but he's coming back on Friday to campaign for a couple of events, and maybe he comes back on Sunday night or Monday for another stop. Not totally writing it off, but the emphasis for him now is on South Carolina. Another big Trump victory in South Carolina. And you tell me, guys, is it all over? Do both of those candidates concede on primary night on the 24th of February in South Carolina? Does it not even make it to Super Tuesday? I don't know. What do you think?
I think so. Shortly thereafter, because where does the money come from? The lifeblood of a campaign obviously is money. You have to keep paying staff. It costs money to fly. DeSantis flies private, and that costs a lot, right?
It's also reputation, right? Like, if you want to have a political future, and I'm pretty sure DeSantis does, do you want to tarnish something that you had some fire there for a little bit? Do you want to just completely make yourself persona non grata? Not that you would per se, not that Nikki would per se. But even Kamala Harris got out on the Democrat side before California because she didn't want to lose her home state. Okay. I just can't imagine Nikki going all the way up to Election Day. Now, she may go a week before, right? She may campaign for 3 weeks to see if she can change something, depending on how she does in New Hampshire. I just don't know. And remember, here's something else looming out there. So Henry McMaster is with Trump. He's the governor of South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
But Tim Scott is out there too. A senator who is very popular in the state, who kind of went silent in a lot of these debates until Nikki started going after him. And then that's where he kind of perked up. So I wouldn't say they're the closest of friends either.
Yeah.
So I expect a Tim Scott endorsement of Trump soon. I just don't know at the end of the day if Nikki's going to want to lose her home state. She doesn't want that narrative. I can't imagine that. Again, I don't know if that means she stays in, because the money's one thing, Tim. I think you're right. But the reputation matters to a lot of these folks too. The pride may be hurt for a little bit, but you don't want to go down your home state by 30 points.
On the money, sources tell me from DeSantis orbit that they've got the money to go through, you know, the end of February through South Carolina. But you know, if they're not bringing much new money in,
it's going to quickly.
And Haley had I had the scoop on that one, so I'll tout that. I had the scoop on her Q4 numbers from this past year. So she's got enough money as well, even though she's starting to spend a lot more, right? She didn't do any ads for a long time, but she's got enough to make it through the end of February. But again, if the new money isn't coming in, yeah. As for Tim Scott, yeah, sources in his orbit tell me that they're not ruling out an endorsement. They're not saying who it would be, but they're definitely not ruling out an endorsement. So that could happen after we get past New Hampshire, and maybe he even waits till after Nevada. I don't know, but you would assume he's going to want to weigh in one way or another in his home state.
Yeah,
I don't think so. I like Tim Scott. I read today that DeSantis is dark on TV everywhere. That he's pulled it, so he's saving money that way, I guess.
Even like a McCain thing. Remember when McCain was really down and he just carried his own bags and commercial flights? He may try to do like a man of the people type
That would require taking commercial flights. I don't know if
DeSantis nor any of the super PACs are up in New Hampshire and have not been up in New Hampshire since I think it's been about 2 months now. They were running ads obviously in Iowa, but Iowa's over.
We're at about 30 minutes here, Paul, and I want to respect your time, but I do want to ask you. You mentioned it briefly that there is in fact a Democrat contest going on in New Hampshire as well, unsanctioned by the National Party. Is there any drama there with because there is a somewhat vocal segment of the Democratic establishment who thinks that Biden needs to be shoved aside and have somebody come and replace him because he's just a flawed candidate in many different ways. Is there any drama there at all? Or is this going to be, complete waste of time and people who have dreams of getting Biden out of the way are going to fail here?
No, not a waste of time. And there is some drama because besides that factor, which you mentioned, there's also the other factor. New Hampshire on the Democratic side, as we just said, is unsanctioned. Why? Because they changed the calendar and they bumped it from its traditional leadoff position as the first primary state. Why? That came from President Biden himself. So there's a lot of animosity by New Hampshire Democrats up here against the president for bumping New Hampshire from a tradition that it's held for a century. So, yeah, a lot of animosity. Flip side to that is Democrats in this state do not like Donald Trump one bit, do not want him back in the White House. That's why a lot of top Democrats in this state have organized this write-in campaign. If you look at the polls, Dean Phillips, in some polls, he's actually up in almost 20%. In others, he's lower down. And Marianne Williamson is also running for a second straight time. So not exactly sure yet. I'd like to see some more numbers here, but there may be there's the possibility of an embarrassment for the president, a possibility.
RFK making a dent up there at all?
Not anymore, because now that he's running, when he was on the Democratic side, that could have been, but no, he's not on the ballot up here. So he's not a factor in this primary.
Okay.
Well, that we've covered a lot of ground here, and Paul, we really appreciate your time. The great Paul Steinhauser of Fox News, lots
expert
of other journalists
in all outlets things along New the way.
Yes, New Hampshire based. Paul, thanks very much. What you care to put some numbers on what we're going to see?
No.
The Republican side or not? Okay.
I'm smart enough that I don't do that. Okay, I've been around long enough that I do not make predictions. But it's always great joining the two of you.
Where can people follow you and get your news and information?
I've got a landing page at foxnews.com. If you just search in Google for Paul Steinhauser Fox News, you'll see my page, and also at Steinhauser NH1 on the Twitters or X, whatever you want to call it.
NH1, baby. That's awesome.
They're long gone, but I can't change my handle there.
Good. All right. Paul Steinhauser from Fox News, we certainly appreciate it. For Hogan Gidley and Sonny Joy Nelson, who couldn't be with us today, I'm Tim Murtaugh. This has been the Line Drive Podcast.